Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest today is director John Suits, who has brought us another new science fiction thriller that happens to take place in a very claustrophobic situation in space. Hi, John.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for talking to me.
No problem. I really enjoyed 3022. So, coming back with Breach, which takes place with more people but still in a claustrophobic situation, I have to wonder: are you working through some claustrophobia issues, or?
Well, what's funny is maybe I was psychic because I am now, in quarantine. So. Just sitting in my house for the last 9 months or whatever it is, dealing with virtual learning with my kids, So yes, I am actually, but at the time I wasn't, but it was sort of a funny situation where I'd always wanted to make a space movie, which I did with 3022. And then I just kind of randomly got contacted about this film, shortly after. I'd worked with the producers before. I was like, all right, well, I did one space movie. This, even though it's kind of an end of the world movie, it's very different tonally, and it seemed like, yeah, it could be something fun to do.
So how did you come across this story? Because there's a lot going on in the story, but it's not hard to follow the different lines.
Right. Yeah. So it was Danny Roth, who is the producer on it, and there's a great producing team with Corey Large and Danny Roth that they're awesome to work with. But I've worked with Danny before, and so he contacted me about it, saying, "Hey, I've got this space, ship movie." And at the time, I was in post on 3022, and I was like, "Oh man, a spaceship movie," because they're obviously very hard to shoot when you're sort of trying to stretch a budget and everything. And then he's like, and it's got Bruce Willis in it. And I, was a huge fan of Bruce Willis growing up. So I was like, all right, space movie, let's do it, So I kind of came into it like a little bit later in the process. Usually in the path I made movies, it is like searching out a script and then sort of building it from that. And this was more so coming in with the script and already with the lead actor and stuff. And it was, a really fun experience.
And what were you excited to work with, not just Bruce Willis, but also Thomas Jane a little bit?
Yeah, I also a huge fan of Thomas Jane, and very cool to work with him. And he was a very calm presence. I think I describe him as kind of zen in a lot of ways and like a really cool guy. So it's fun to work with him because he's just super professional, showed up, did his thing. And stayed, even though we're having to, shoot at a very aggressive rate the whole time, he's just kind of just chill, good dude, really good guy.
Well, I don't want to go too much into spoilers, but this movie is about humanity leaving Earth because Earth is no longer tenable, both from a population standpoint, a plague standpoint, and a small, relatively small number of people, I think they said 50 million, take off in a series of hyperdrive-enabled ships to basically settle a new Earth. And on the way, problems ensue that involve gory explosions of people. And just the mystery around what's happening, how this got on the ship in the first place, is really intriguing to me. And the thought of an external force wanting to stop humans from leaving Earth is a really prevalent theme in a lot of older science fiction. And how did you approach getting that across that, some people might not want humans to leave Earth because look what they did to Earth?
Yeah, and I think that's a fun theme to deal with because that is like, in a lot of ways, like what we are currently doing, if you look at it in some ways, is we're like, trashing the planet and they're like, all right, well, maybe we'll just move on when we're done with it. I don't think anybody consciously feels that way, but it does seem like that's the mentality that a lot of people have. And I think there's the flip side of that is like, look, you reap what you sow, you know? And so there's a contingent that feel that way. And there's also a bit of this that the people that do get to leave, those loved ones, are leaving behind everybody else and kind of dooming them. And for a lot of people, it's leaving their family, their loved ones. And, you know, I think there's a bit of a classist feeling to that as well. And it is kind of funny that there is this whole plague element to it. And, you know, now we have the COVID hitting shortly after. So it feels timely in that way, I guess. But, you know, one thing in retrospect now is that, you know, there's like that sort of crowd scene at the beginning. And I'm like, well, if there's a plague element, where's everybody's mask? You know, shouldn't we all be wearing masks, like cool designer masks? But so that's something that I, you know, now would have changed that part of it. But no, it's definitely I definitely am a fan of old school sci-fi. And I think in 3022, you can see a lot of those sort of references. And, you know, and so I like themes of, you know, where it's not always black and white. And, you know, the people that are leaving maybe aren't all the good guys, you know, and all that sort of stuff to kind of, and if there is somebody that has an ulterior motive, that we can at least understand where they're coming from versus just having people be villainous, you know. So I think that's kind of a fun theme to play with.
The small delight for me was I did not expect that much of a horror element going in to this sci-fi thriller, and to witness some of the bloody eviscerations was funny to me. I'm like, oh, cool, I get this too. And how much of those were practical? Because, you know, I go into a science fiction thriller, I expect to see CGI laser blasts and spaceships, but to see full-on monster-caused carnage, I'm like, whoa, cool.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the blood effects and things like the splattering and those sort of things were all practical, and, you know, like head smashing and that sort of stuff. Not practical meaning using real people in that situation, but, but, you know, practical as much as it can be. And because I think that's fun, or like punching through people. You know, I also think, obviously, like whenever you can do things practically, there's a big benefit to it. It's hard a lot of times when you're on such an aggressive schedule, because we, you know, shot the whole thing in 15 days, and that's you know, you're just moving the whole time. So and you know, usually to set up the practical effects, it takes more time, but we still tried to do it as much as we could. Like when there was the opportunity, you know, we would do that. And it was funny with the specific scene where an actor gets covered in blood because of splatter. You know, it's kind of, you know, you get a genuine reaction from him, because there's like this gun thing facing him, and it kept not going off when it was supposed to. So then he's like, I don't want to know what's going to happen. But then it was like, build up, and then, oop, not yet. Never mind. Then build up, and then, oop, not yet. So then when it finally did splatter him in the face, I think there was some genuine shock, you know, to that moment. And, you know, that's also one of those things where you really only get one take to really get it, because if you know, it was amazing. Our special effects makeup team was awesome. And, you know, they were aiming this thing at his face. And like, if you miss, like you gotta hit him the first time, or otherwise you ruin the set and, you know, miss the actor, would be hard. So it's not as easy as it looks. Like they were aiming it perfectly in this like area where we were set up for a shot. And so that was definitely stressful. And so, you know, but I just love stuff like that. And you know, and I think that was sort of the goal with this movie, is just to have fun with things like that. And, and there's a lot of great opportunities to kind of have those little gory moments and horror elements and horror scenes and stuff.
Now, were there any story elements or shots that you couldn't get because of budget constraints or time constraints? Because there was one storyline in there that didn't seem to me to be complete. Maybe I missed something, but I'm like, okay, I'm missing a piece here. What's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I think we were able to shoot everything that, you know, was in the script, but there was definitely, I think, in the prep process, some changes and stuff like that, that, you know, may have been to help streamline things and stuff. And, you know, it's just sort of the nature of it as you're prepping. But you know, so but I think once we started shooting, you know, we were able to get through everything. But it's definitely, you know, you have to be strategic in how you approach it, because it's and I do a lot of commercials, and that's a very different process, where in the amount of time, you know, I've had things where I've shot 5 days, I mean, that's 30 seconds versus this, where, you know, in 5 days you're shooting 40 pages or something. So it's just a different approach, and you have to kind of figure out how strategically to best maximize your time, and so that you can get all the things you want, and then figure out which things you have to kind of let go of, because time, you know, in terms of the time you have, it would eat up your whole day. You know, like there was a sequence, for example, that was out in space that I think we ended up nixing because it didn't feel necessary to the story, and it felt like there was a better use strategically as we were shooting.
Cool. So during lockdown, have you been able to work on any new projects, like look for projects to work on, maybe write something, anything like that?
It's definitely, you know, there for the first 4 or 5 months were pretty, you know, just again, mainly dealing with virtual learning. That was what it was about. And then I did, I directed, actually, I got to work with Bruce Willis again, which was really fun. I directed a commercial for Die Hard Batteries.
Nice.
Yeah, so that was really fun. And doing that during quarantine was really tough, because we had to shoot the whole thing without any actors getting close to each other. So there's scenes of Bruce in the car with, and we had to shoot that, the people's actors separately on green screen and then combine them. So that was but that's a good example where that was a 2-minute spot and we had 4 days to shoot it. So it's a, you know, you approach things very differently in those situations. And then, you know, and then currently sort of working on something that I think will shoot early next year, a feature, and then otherwise just have been, you know, doing commercials other than that.
I love that Die Hard commercial, and seeing Argyle come back to drive the car.
my friends were cracking
up at that.
Yeah, it was really fun. Like that was a great experience, and it was great to work with Bruce and his whole team again. And you know, and you know, yeah, that for me too. I was such a fan of the Die Hard movies growing up, so it just was, you know, it's great to do something like that, because again, you get, you know, we really had the time to, you know, work out all the sequences in a very specific way, and you know, and also like to do big explosions and car crashes and stuff. It was a really fun shoot. Very stressful, just, you know, dealing with COVID protocols. We were very, very safe in the way we approached it. You know, but that was my first time shooting since February, I think. And it was, you know, there's a lot of logistical pieces that have to kind of come together in the right way. But yeah, it was so fun working with all those actors, and you know, they're all awesome.
Nice. So tell everybody where they can find you online. Keep up with whatever you're working on next.
Yeah. So I have a production company which for commercials is called it's natural-selection.tv is the website. And then I still have a site for myself, which is, I think, johnsuitsfilms.com. And then I just got an Instagram for Natural Selection. I'm still trying to figure out how it works, but I finally pushed onto Instagram, but I don't really know how to use it yet. So maybe will become a thing that I'm doing correctly at some point. But, you know, so those are probably places to sort of see, latest happenings, I would say.
Awesome. Well, we will have links to all of those, and, you know, the fans can watch you get used to Instagram.
Yeah, I have two people helping me, to be honest, like that I work with that are more with the times, that they've been so far sort of, they have my login info and have been posting stuff. I'm trying to go onto it and figure it out. You know, it's a work in progress. I still don't totally get it yet.
Well, you have fun with that. I hope my listeners and fans will appreciate Breach, because it is a romp of a sort. Breach will be in theaters,
yeah,
on demand and digital on December 18th. John, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and I really appreciate it.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this. Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. We're back now with Rachel Nichols, who is starring in Breach, coming to you December 18th. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there. How are you, Summer?
Pretty good. We just got finished talking to your director, John Suits, about this interestingly claustrophobic movie. So how did you come to Breach, and what were you looking forward to most about it?
John Suits, 100%. I had done, as I'm sure you know, a movie with him a couple years ago, appropriately but sadly named Pandemic, with Mekhi Phifer and Alfie Allen and Missy Pyle, and we were on a very tiny budget, and the film was great. I'm really proud of it, and I loved working with John. And I had said to him, I will work with you. I said, I would work with you on a deodorant commercial. That's how much I like working with you. He is, and when you're working with, I mean, Pandemic was a very low budget. He kept his cool. Things could go wrong. Financial things come up. Of course, he's just cool as a cucumber. He's very collaborative. And when the offer came in, I went, oh, it's John Suits. Of course. No question about it. I do it for free. And that was kind of what started the whole thing.
So I remember Pandemic. Pandemic was a very uniquely shot film. And I can only imagine that if you loved that, this must have gone a step further, because it was smaller sets and more gooey encounters to deal with.
Yeah. I mean, the set that they built, they did our set deck and props on that movie for, you know, the budget that they were given. It was incredible. And they built this entire set. And yeah, it was claustrophobic, but it was supposed to be, because that's the whole, I mean, for me, I'm somebody who actually is quite claustrophobic, and the idea of getting taken to a different earth and being cryogenically frozen or kept alive in a pod, I mean, that to me is just, I just start sweating. So it was very close and it was very confined. And I think that was really important to portray the sort of overarching stress and tension that the script and the movie actually needed, because it was just like very, very close quarters. And I think they did it on purpose and they did a fantastic job. But yeah, it was definitely, and John, again, never loses his mind, never raises his voice. He's the coolest cucumber I've ever met. It's crazy. I don't know how he does it.
So what was it like getting to share action sequences with some renowned names in action filmmaking?
Oh, Mr. Bruce Willis. I know that he's a legend and he's an action movie badass and all of that stuff, but that man is so sweet and so nice to everybody. And he was so fun to work with. And I know that people probably wouldn't think this about him, but he is a prankster. He does jokey things all the time. At one point, one scene, he tried to dare me to go into the scene. Now, we're shooting this movie. We only have 3 days with Bruce. Bruce only shot for 3 days and then he had to leave. So we're going into this scene and he was trying to put this sort of army pith helmet on my head. And he goes, it would be really funny if you walked into the scene wearing that. And I said, Bruce, if you want to walk into the scene wearing this helmet, you can, because you're Bruce Willis. I cannot walk into a scene and screw up a take because I am not you. You can do it, babe. You can go for it. You do you, but I can't be dragged into this because I can't mess up a take because we're paying a lot for your face. And so he thought that was pretty funny, but it was great to work with him. He's a really jovial guy. And one of my favorite scenes were in the cafeteria because he's been friends with Johnny Mesner forever, and they have this great back and forth, and mm-hmm. they're just telling stories, and it was nice to see that kind of camaraderie and to meet someone and have him not disappoint as far as personality and involvement was concerned.
So how tight was the shooting schedule? Because it sounds like you guys didn't have a lot of room to improvise or even retake.
No, there was not a lot of room. And it, so Bruce was, like I said, Bruce shot for 3 days. And then we kind of had to, those 3 days, we had to get all of his coverage for the entire movie. And then when he left, we kind of reshot the whole movie using his double. So those first 3 days were stressed to the max because we only had Bruce for so long. And then after he left, it was actually kind of cool because I'd never shot a film this way before. But it was kind of cool because since we had done all of his coverage and already essentially shot the entire movie, we already had our blocking. We already knew we were going to be in every scene after Bruce left. So we could move at a breakneck speed because we'd already shot it. Because a lot of what happens on a film set is you go and you're walking, you're trying to figure out the blocking for each scene. Well, we had 3 days to figure out the blocking for the entire movie. So then when he was gone and we were working with his double, we already knew all of the blocking. So we could fly through. We already had done all, everybody knew their lines and their positions. And so that was actually pretty cool. And it lent itself to be very productive and probably the reason that we were able to finish such an aggressive film and such a also aggressive time schedule, time frame. So we didn't have a lot of wiggle room, but we wiggled all we could.
Well, the movie itself is kind of tense from beginning to end. Did that pace of filming, do you think, help add to that tension in the atmosphere of the film?
Yeah, absolutely. I also, between Carl and Tim and Johnny and Bruce and Angie, and we were all, you're all on the same team, right? And with the set and the tone and the vibe and what the movie was about, I think it all just, sometimes you can use what's given you in the scene or in the movie or in the character, and sometimes you have to fight against what's given you to do the performance you want. But yes, the constraints that we were under, and I mean, thank goodness it was pre-COVID. I don't know how we would have done it during COVID with that, that kind of budget, that kind of movie. But I think the breakneck speed that we had to go at lent itself well to the tension in the film.
Now, you've done in these genre things, the things I can think of off the top of my head. You did Pandemic. You did Continuum before that. You did... you're doing Breach now. Is the storytelling, or is there something else about a horror or horror adjacent or science fiction adjacent story that you like to find yourself helping to tell?
Yeah, I mean, I do like sort of the supernatural, and I do. Continuum for me was, I'm so proud of that show, and I mm-hmm. loved it, and I. For Continuum, I was fascinated by the rules of the space-time continuum. And if you're going to do, a show with time travel, you got to get the rules right. And I've said this before, but sci-fi fans are the best. Because if you do something well and you abide by whatever sort of rules you set in your show and you keep up with the lore and the legend, they love you and they'll come to the conventions and they'll watch the show and they'll buy the merch. And I'm sci-fi fans are the best, followed by very closely horror/thriller fans, because there are a lot in that same sort of zone. And if you do something poorly, they will have your head on a stick. They will come at you hard if you don't do the system justice, which I love because I am anal, retentive, and very perfectionist oriented, and I like everything to be just right. So that really, I'm really drawn to that because there are such rules and regulations when it comes, especially to sci-fi.
And the fun part is if you do something well after something that they weren't happy with, they'll forgive you really quickly.
They will. There is redemption. And for that, I am also thankful. But yeah, I love the genre because it makes you think. It makes you think, and you can enjoy it and you can have fun with it. But man, it's smart. It's got to be smart if it's going to be good. And that's what I love about it.
Yes. Well, we are looking forward to seeing you in Breach and in any other new sci-fi or horror you are coming out with.
I won't let you down.
Awesome.
I will not let you down.
Awesome.
I promise.
Good to hear. Rachel, thank you so
thank
much
you, Summer,
for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hi, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. We're talking about the new sci-fi action thriller Breach, starring Bruce Willis, Rachel Nichols, with Thomas Jane, directed by John Suits, and also starring my current guest, Cody Kearsley. Welcome, sir.
Hey, what's up? How you doing?
Pretty good. Now, this movie is kind of a romp, and everyone seems to be having a lot of fun both shooting and getting covered in goo. How would you rate your experience filming Breach?
Yeah, it was a ton of fun. It almost felt like a summer camp in a way. We were all in this small town of Fitzgerald in Georgia, and we all went there for a month and just had the best time shooting aliens, running around the spaceship, and just essentially playing with each other. It was fun.
what you were bringing to the character, to the movie, was more of a reluctant action hero, because you're there, you know, minor spoilers, you're there to protect your family, the family you're putting together, and you're getting on the last spaceship off of Earth to save humanity, and shenanigans ensue, and you have to learn to become an action hero. What part of that process did you enjoy most?
Yeah, I think the heart and soul of the story and my character was that job to protect the family. You know, jump into this dangerous situation, this environment that it really has no business being in at all. He's never held a gun in his life. But he's there, you know, to provide for his partner, an unborn child. And then he has to rise to the occasion. So that passion that he has and that protective nature he has for his family is what I really connected with at first. That was the driving force for me, and that's what I focused most of my energy on, building that relationship with Cassandra.
Were there any sequences that stand out to you as character defining moments or the most fun moments?
I think the biggest defining character moment is actually off camera. So at the beginning, it's when he doesn't get on the ship and then he somehow sneaks his way through the ventilation shaft or however he gets on. That's, you know, that's the first big leap onto the spaceship. And then from that point on, it's just, okay, well, how do I survive? How do I figure this out? What am I going to do? Some of the funnest sequences were with Cassandra. Any of the moments that we were together and we kind of had a more intimate dialogue, those are the most grounding and heartfelt for me. And those bled into the other scenes of survival, because that's what I was fighting for, that intimacy and that loving relationship that we had.
Are you a big science fiction or horror fan? Because this movie has a little bit of horror, a little bit of playing with the goo of monsters and people, and also some shoot 'em ups.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a few sci-fi and horror films. They're not usually my go-to genre, but as far as acting in them, it's a hell of a time. I had a great time. It's playing in this fantastical world, and you get to know where else can you shoot aliens. It's a good time.
So in coming to Breach, I think most of the audience here probably know you from Riverdale, but what was it about the story in Breach that made you gravitate towards this?
The main thing was the family connection and being thrust into these circumstances that I'm not equipped for, which I really like that story of rising to the occasion and filling the shoes and being able to protect my family. I love that about it. And also it was an opportunity to work with Bruce Willis, who's an icon. And this is kind of his forte, this genre, and all the other amazing cast like Timothy Murphy, Rachel Nichols, Cal Mulvey.
Yeah, it seemed like Bruce was having a little bit of fun just sitting back and delivering the one-liners and the occasional shots here and there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you pick up any pointers from Bruce? Because I think he was only on set for just a couple of days.
Yeah, we didn't have him the whole time. We had him for 3 days. We had a lot of pages to get through during that time. We were a little bit rushed, so we kind of just all had our noses at the grindstone and just moved ahead. But it was good. It was good watching him just, like you said, deliver those one-liners. That's what he's known for, and that stillness and the conviction of what he says is really interesting to watch.
So, what sort of stories appeal to you as an actor beyond, outside of science fiction? Because you said the family angle was more important to you. Is that the type of story you like to be involved in?
I like stories that will dive into either a character's psychology or the circumstances of which a character finds himself in that may not be normal for their life. So I really like, slow burn dramas, period pieces, biopics. I like any character that's as far away from my personal life as possible, so I can really dive in and research and explore what that life would be like.
Do you prefer being the heartfelt hero or the secretly malicious villain?
Yeah, villain for sure.
Nice. What type of?
No one thinks they're the bad guy. Everyone thinks they're the good guy in their own story, right? So this, villains aren't trying to be bad. They're usually trying to just do what they think is best.
Yeah, the bad guy is the hero of his own story from a different point of view, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
What do you find yourself looking to work on next?
I'm focusing a lot on writing and directing right now. I'm writing and directing a short film and a feature film, hopefully next year. So I'm moving more into that avenue of storytelling. As far as acting, auditions have been pretty slow just because of COVID this year. But I'd love to get on to like an HBO series or Amazon series or another Netflix series. Yeah.
Do you see expanding your horizons with writing and directing as something to help you with your acting as well?
Yeah, I think they all lead into each other. Any sort of facet of storytelling, because at the end of the day, it is you're telling a story. And I'm from a theater background, so anytime I'm on set, it's a very collaborative effort with everyone trying to tell the best stories possible. So in writing and directing, I'm just getting it from a different point of view. So then when I'm acting, I will be able to, maybe see it from a different lens to help the director or writer get what they need as well. But they all help. Yeah.
So for your writing, are you primarily focused on film or theater or both?
So far, I'm like halfway through two plays. I have all these little concepts that I've written that kind of have these half fleshed out versions of what I want to create. So I have a lot of mini plays written. Right now, I've been inspired mostly to write film. But it's just whenever the inspiration kind of strikes, I start writing. I also have like a beginning of a couple of novels. I have a lot of little pieces all around. I start to finish stuff sometimes. But I think COVID's helped me actually finish some projects. So I've actually finished a full feature script and a short script.
Nice. For you, what is the most fulfilling part of writing a story, whatever format it's in?
In my process, I'm very explorative, whether it's acting or writing or directing. So I don't cross anything off. I ask a lot of questions, and in the writing, new explorations and new questions will arise, and then I explore those avenues. And even if they don't work out in the end, I've explored that. So I like mapping out the world and building the world, and then kind of like a puzzle, piecing it all together, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
The exploration of the world I'm trying to create is my favorite part.
Nice. So do you think for the next series you get onto, would you pitch an episode, being able to write an episode for it?
Directing for sure. Maybe not writing, but I definitely would love to direct an episode of something I was in.
And what do you like most about directing?
Well, it's similar to acting in a way, like we're trying to figure out the shape of the scene and the character development and the arc and the build and all these different things. And just when you're directing it, you're looking at it from an outside perspective, and you're focusing on all the characters at once and how they interact with each other and how they affect each other. Whereas acting, you try to be as one-sided as possible, so you're in the moment of your character's perspective. So director, you're just kind of expanding your lens to see all characters' point of view, and you're still trying to shape this story. So I like looking at it from the outside perspective once in a while.
And you mentioned working on a couple of short features. Is there anything that you have written or directed that's out there for people to watch yet?
Not yet, no. I did a film called Borealis like years ago when I was younger. I don't know, even know if it's on YouTube or not, but it was like a little writing thing when I was young. I don't know how it holds up, but it might be out there. But as far as like my first like big project or my first like passion project, it'll be coming out next year.
Cool. Well, where can our listeners find you online to keep up with all these other projects you're working on?
I'm probably most active on Instagram. It's just my name, at Cody Kearsley. I'm on Twitter as well, which I believe is the same, at Cody Kearsley. I'm not sure. Mostly just show articles on that. I'm not on Twitter that much. Yeah.
So do you interact with the fans who are watching you in other projects much?
Sometimes. I'm not the biggest social media guy. I kind of have it because my agent tells me I need to have it. So, you know, I post pictures, but I'm not on it that much, scrolling through things.
That's probably a good thing, because there are so many rabbit holes to get trapped in down there.
Yeah, and it's just easy to get depressed. I'll see people like traveling all over the world. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. Yeah.
Well, Cody, the movie is Breach, out on video and on demand digital on December 18th from Saban Films. It is a bit of a romp for a sci-fi thriller mystery fan. And if you like messy aliens, it's good for you too. Cody, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Buying books for the holidays? Consider gifting someone or yourself a copy of Escape Pod's first ever anthology, celebrating 15 years of our podcast. With authors like Ken Liu, N.K. Jemisin, Greg Van Eekhout, and Cameron Hurley, you're sure to find a story to please. You can pick up the book wherever books are sold, and we encourage you to support your local independent bookseller.
Hi guys, this is Tom Allison, and I play Pree on Killjoys, and you're listening to Slice of Sci-Fi.
Breach is available now on your favorite on-demand platforms, digital platforms. This is the sort of mindlessly fun popcorn sci-fi action goopy thriller. Okay. And yes, I use goopy in a loving way, because there's no other way to describe the mess that they make in killing the aliens or being killed by the aliens. And Rachel Nichols' character is sort of a medical professional, and she digs her hand right into that goo, and it's hilarious. You have to see it for yourself. I kind of wish Thomas Jane and Bruce Willis had more scenes together, because that is just dying for like five scenes worth of, you know, swapping one-liners. Sometimes you just need a movie that's mystery and mayhem from top to bottom and on spaceships making a mess. And Breach is one of those. The contests that are running for the end of year giveaways, which you can find on the Twitter feed, twitter.com/sliceofscifi. The giveaway for that has been extended through noon Pacific on December 31st, just because holidays. People step away from social media and are living lives away from the train wreck dumpster fire that is Twitter. But we have a lot of things to give away over there. Check them out. We have graphic novels. We have DVDs, actually Blu-rays of a lot of CW shows. One Batman animated, Batman Hush, if you're curious. And a handful of books that we've actually talked about on the show. So head on over to Twitter, check out the contests, giveaways. Each item has its own separate tweet. Leave a comment, answer the question for the tweet to enter yourself, make yourself eligible to win that particular prize, and we'll see who gets what on December 31st. And of course, if you have any questions or comments about the giveaways or about any of the interviews we've done for 2020 or comments for the impending Slice of Sci-Fi 2020 selections list, call in, leave a message. The number is 602-635-6976 or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts. Don't get me started. Google is starting to mess up my life again. And you can also check out TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio podcasts for places to listen to Slice of Sci-Fi. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, feel free to leave us a review. Reviews help signal boost, and signal boosting is what we need right now. You can follow Slice of Sci-Fi on Twitter. It's at Slice of Sci-Fi. And we've got the YouTube channel, youtube.com/sliceofscifi, for various video content. Previous reviews before theaters were shut down. We have a really, really cool Star Wars nitpicking conference, the audio of which you heard here earlier. But if you want to see the actual Star Wars authors as we nitpick together, that video is over on YouTube. And of course, there's a website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by, leave a comment. Leave a rating or review on some of the reviews we've done for movies, TV shows, some books, a lot of DVDs and Blu-rays. Come on by, weigh in with your own opinions, get that geek discussion started. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently helping to support this show and all the others in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe, including Writers After Dark and Babylon Podcast. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep the lights on around here. So thank you. Thank you all. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Join a tier, become eligible for a monthly perk. Every month, somebody has their email address pulled out of the hat, and they get to choose from a book, a DVD, a Blu-ray, all sorts of fun stuff around here. And if you'd rather show your support every now and then, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Actually, this will be the last episode for 2020. We've got some good stuff coming up in January 2021. Stay tuned for that. But again, thank you all for listening. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi in 2021. Take care.